On today's episode of The Good Word, Ice Young joins us, and together we list off the best NBA players under the age of 28 years old before talking about why NBA players can't have fistfights anymore. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. It is Wednesday, which means we are joined by Ice Young, an analyst here for Yahoo Sports. Ice, how you doing?
I'm good. I feel like this is my favorite time of the year, almost. Like, as soon as college basketball starts, then it's just all sports all at once. So I'm great. I'm happy. How are you?
I am wonderful. Like, this is the second full week of the season. After next week, we will have one less sport to play. You know what sport that is? One less sport to play after next week. But because it's Wednesday, and I think this is largely in honor of Paolo Banchero putting up a 50 burger a couple of days ago, just got us to thinking some of the best players, or the absolute best players, under the age of 28. Don't ask me why 28. I think that was John Gennaro who did that. We're also going to talk about, towards the end of the show, fighting in the NBA and why we can't do it anymore. That's going to be fun. But 28 is just an arbitrary cutoff. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's usually when players enter their prime. So few names who were cut off of the list because they just turned 28. Karl Towns, Domas Sabonis, Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson, Jalen Brown, Devin Booker. So if you don't hear those names, it's not a shock. Nobody's disrespecting them. We're just saying, for purposes of this conversation, they won't be included. Also tonight, which I think is really, really good here, Ice, Chet versus Wimby, because I feel like that's Skinny Bowl. Like, I went to Skinny Bowl one, and it wasn't great. It was like a 30-point game, to the point that TNT actually cut away from the game last year. I've never seen TNT cut away from a game because it was a 40-point game in the third quarter, whatever it was. But I think when you think, Ice, of the future of the league and what it's supposed to look like, those two guys, as far as the versatility, the shot blocking, the rebounding, them being skinny, looks like that's what the NBA is going to look like. Or maybe these are the aliens at the forefront of what the NBA is going to look like.
Yeah, you say aliens, like, I thought unicorns. This is literally what I put in my notes. Like, they will be the unicorns of the future, just in terms of, obviously, their freak athleticism and frame, but also in terms of what they both were able to produce in their rookie seasons, and then the just easiest opportunities of potential and growth, right? Like, they don't really have to do much in order to become more dominant. It's going to happen just as they play more games at this level, as they continue to be more aware. Obviously, I think for both of their games, there's glaring things that you leave last year and you think, okay, they can get better in their sophomore season at these things. But already, I'll start with talking about Chet, and why I love Chet on this list is, like, him putting the ball on the floor, right? Like, we did not see a ton of that last year at all, but you can tell that he has worked on a bit of his guard skills. He seems a little bit stronger in terms of his center gravity. Like, I always think the core has to be the strongest. And so he seems like he's not getting knocked off necessarily of his driving lanes as well, right? It's one thing to put the ball on the floor, Vinny, and then get it taken or be loose with it. It's another thing to put the ball on the floor and be assertive and get from point A to point B. So I really love that we're seeing that from him. And then just defensively, like, 2 blocks a game last year. Could he average 4? Could Wemby average 4? Do you know the last person to average 4 blocks a season
in the NBA?
Let me start asking you trivia questions. That's what I need to do.
I want to say David Robinson averaged 4.5. Maybe his rookie year. I want to say Ben Wallace came close to 4, but I don't think he crossed 4. So if I had to guess, and John Gennaro can correct me on this one, I feel like it was David Robinson in his rookie year. I don't know if Dikembe Mutombo actually ever got 4. I know Shaq never did. I don't think Hakeem Olajuwon did as late as David Robinson did, because David came in later. So my answer is David Robinson. I don't know if you have the answer up, but is the answer David Robinson?
The answer is not David Robinson, but I love what you just did because I learned tons as you were tracking back. It's Nkembe Mutombo in 95, 96, literally also about 28, 29 years ago. As we're talking about
that doesn't sound
today.
That long ago to me though, Ice. It doesn't. I remember 95, 96. I remember, I can tell you, like, you know, going to the crates, Michael Jordan won MVP. That was the year the Bulls won 72 games. I think four other MVP votes went somewhere else that year. Like that was Shaq's last year in Orlando. Like it was I remember 95, 96. They moved the 3-point line up to increase scoring. Like I remember that. That does not sound that long ago. So Nkembe Mutombo, I think that was his last year in Denver before he went to Atlanta in free agency. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Got you. Mm-hmm. We went on the detour. I think Victor Wembanyama, though, can get there this year. I do. I don't know if Chet can get there this year because he's not going to play center once Isaiah Hartenstein gets back. So he's not necessarily going to be always on the back line of the defense. He'll be in help. He won't necessarily be at the rim. I think Big Slim will always be at the rim unless he decides to pull himself away from the rim and be Jason Voorhees and be in the front of you, be in the back of you, be wherever that you know, like he's like Visa. He's wherever you don't want to be. You know what I mean? Like that man is a problem. But I think your point about Chet and his ball skills and his center of gravity, that's such a great point, Ice, because that unlocks so much for Oklahoma City to do. You already have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander that's going to have a lot of usage. You're going to have J-Dub, who you want to explore a little bit more as he grows. But being able to, for him, for Chet, to be able to operate that at the top of the key, for him to take it off the glass, initiate the fast break, get those guys running their lanes wide, hopefully to the basket and not to the three-point line, that forces defenses to account for you in a way that they're not prepared to. And he kicked Nikola Jokic's ass in the opening game in Denver. Like, the numbers won't say it per se, but he ran that dude up and down the floor in altitude in that man's building. So I'm 100% with you on that one. I think Big Slim is just a different level of athlete on all these different metrics are going to say that he's going to be the best defensive player for the next decade.
Right.
And at some point, I think Ice, he's going to be the absolute best player.
Do you feel like for him, that should be a goal of Wemby's in the next 5 years is defensive player of the year, be the best defensive player of the year, like dominating, like no.
Ice, he's that right now. He's the best defensive. Yes. He's the best defensive player in the league right now. I think he finished third in his rookie year on the Defensive Player of the Year balloting behind Rudy Gobert, and I think Anthony Davis finished second. I think he was second. He was second to Rudy Gobert. Anthony Davis was third on my ballot. It was reversed. It was Rudy, AD, then Vic, right?
Okay.
So that was, you know, that's a thing in itself. Yeah, I do think he needs to focus on being the best defender on earth because that will elevate the Spurs into being a quicker contender than what it looks like right now.
Yeah.
Now, there's two other young sort of 20-ish year olds that we have to get to, right? Oh, excuse me. Let me correct that. Bam Adebayo was third last year in DPOY, not Anthony Davis. There we go. I had something right. Thank you, John. But last night, the game of the night was the rematch of the Western Conference Finals. If you are the Minnesota Timberwolves, you got to have nightmares whenever you see Luka Doncic with the ball at the top of the key with a chance to ice it, or you're down two or you're up five, whatever it is, because that man lives to torture you. And
seriously.
Was that move, like you brought up in pre-show, that ball looked like it hung in the air for a good 15 seconds.
Like you said, it was high. It was long. It was perfect. Literally a swish, like nothing but net. But you're right. But it's always cool being a player, too, and just having certain teams that you just are the villain. Like every single time they're getting your best, most clutch moments that you could possibly give. Like as a player, it's nice to have that in your pocket and to know that when I come in here, I'm good.
I think it's important to note that, for one, and this is not necessarily in the under 28 conversation, but just for the purpose of this discussion, we cannot forget about Dallas when we talk about the Western Conference contenders. Like, it's very cute to say Oklahoma City, which I think will be very good, and all the other teams in the West, because the West is stacked. They have two closers. You saw Kyrie in the second half take that game over, and then he sort of handed it over to Luka in the last couple of minutes. And the fact that there's the trust level between the two, that Luka doesn't have to take every shot in the last 6 or 7 minutes, but can still be the guy with the ball in the game in his hands with Kyrie Irving on one side and Klay Thompson on the other side. You have to keep defenses honest. You can't run and double. You have to concede the switch. Like, it is a big time problem for defenses as long as those two guys are on the floor. And he only hit 28, 8, and 8. And I say that as if that's a bad number, you know, but the dagger just makes it look so much, you know, it hurts that much more, right?
Yeah, nah, for sure. And I think spacing is going to be the key word with this team all season. It's like, how can they continue to create space and stretch the floor, especially when you have both guys that can and like to get downhill. But I think what you said about, you know, Kai taking over for a portion of the game and then giving it back to Luka at the end is how they had a successful run in the playoffs. You know, that happened several times. It was several quarters where, like, it was Kai going off for 20 and then giving it back to Luka and like, hey, you finish it off in these last 6-7 minutes and let's go on a run. And so I think, like you talk about, when you're the defense and you're worried about Kyrie Irving going on a stretch like he did, scoring 20-something points in a quarter, and then you're worried about Luka closing out games the way he can, and then now you're worried about Klay Thompson shooting at the clip that he's consistently shooting at with them. He looks very good in this offense and very comfortable, like he should, but still, I think any time that you leave a franchise that you've been at forever and you go to a new team with new players, there's an adjustment period, but he's shooting the basketball like he should. He's doing exactly what they need him to do to continue to space the floor. So I like the recipe of which I'm seeing from them, you know, already. And I like the sharing of the wealth. That only is going to make you more dangerous. If we know who's taking the shot every single time, we can scheme for that.
In theory, I think you can scheme for that. Sometimes when you're dancing, you just got a boogie. Because everybody knew 23 was taking those shots. And 23 is in the mic. Everybody knew he was taking them. And 95 times out of 100, he was taking them, unless he wanted to give Steve Kerr a nibble or John Paxson a nibble. I mean, he wasn't passing to Scotty. But, you know, that sort of thing, right? On the other side, the direct descendant of Michael Jordan, Anthony Edwards, right? He had a hot quarter, right? He had 24 in the first, finished with 37. Looked like he fell on his hip late in the game, which might have hindered him a little bit. But that was already late when the slowdown had already begun.
Right.
He's taking ice 11 threes a night.
Yeah.
And for him to be the devastating driver to the basket that he is. Now, granted, he's shooting at a 42% clip, so it's not like he's not shooting at an efficient number. But I do think that when you put pressure on the defense, rim pressure on the defense, A, that opens things up for everybody else, that gets the bigs in foul trouble. Even when you're hitting three, sometimes it can be a little bit of fool's gold. You're bailing the defense out. You're not putting anybody in foul trouble. You're not forcing defenses to be a lot more uncomfortable. But then that's me nitpicking. Because this dude is 23 years old, and he is playing with a polish and athleticism to his game that we haven't seen many guys put together at this early of an age in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I think polish there is the key word. From the 6 threes that he hit in the first quarter of that game, I paid attention to like footwork. Like, I'm a shooter, and I know that footwork is everything in terms of gearing up for your shot. But his footwork this season in these short games we've seen just looks so much cleaner. It looks so much more in rhythm, clean, on the dime, and then he's elevating a little bit better and quicker. And so everything just flows a bit more. Like, I think he really got in the gym and worked on his footwork leading up to his shot, whether that's off the dribble or catch and shoot, right? We know probably 90% of his are off the dribble. He did a really good job, like, knocking down shots behind the screen, and I think more consistently. But where I differ from you is that, like, 11 threes a game, if you continue to shoot them at 42%, like, if this stays consistent, how can we stop him? Like, the only question then becomes shot selection. Like, him understanding and having the high IQ to know when shot selection, what is correct about shot selection, right? When to know that you might need to turn up and get downhill this quarter, and then when to know you can stretch it back out. But I think anybody will say that it's nicer when your three can set you up to play versus you always having to be in attack mode, always having to attack somebody's hip, always having to break somebody down. Yes, I know he's fantastic at that. And we know he can do that at a high rate. But I think if he is consistently a 40% three-point shooter, I think he's got to shoot 9 to 10 threes a game. And if he starts off making four in the first quarter, then yeah, you got to keep going. Like, right, that was a little bit discouraging because he made six in the first quarter.
See, this is where the age difference in us changes just a little bit, Ice.
Yes, because I don't remember 95, 96. I was actually being conceived then. 96, I was just born.
The fact that you said I was being conceived, you put a mental image in your own head there, champ. All right?
I was. That's why. Come on. I know how we got here.
Really? Okay, cool. Look, y'all don't know this.
Just learned yesterday, John. I just learned.
Hey, look. Ice's daddy, who I've never seen actually on air, but apparently that dude is a stern fellow, a stern chap. He must not be anywhere near you for you to be talking so recklessly like that.
I'm dead. No, he's not here. He's at his home.
See,
which
that's what
is
I'm
at
saying.
My home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's all. I wouldn't be saying all that type of stuff. I'm 40 years old, almost 40 years old. I wouldn't be saying that. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. But to your point, yes, Anthony Edwards, if he continues to shoot at a 42% clip, when he is a 36% three-point shooter for his career the last 3 years, he's right at 36, 37. So this would be a marked jump at 23 years old, which is not uncommon. I would argue, I won't say argue because I don't think it's an argument. I would counter with Anthony Edwards got really good at reading the game last year, especially during the playoffs, especially during the first two rounds when defenses were loading up on him to prevent drives, not necessarily zoning up, but loading up on him. When he was making the reads that enabled all the other guys who cannot create shots on their own to get shots based off of the gravity that he created, off the threat of the drive, that's where I think his game started to rise to another level. If you wind up standing behind a three-point line, the gravity becomes a little bit different. Like Steph Curry is the greatest three-point shooter of all time. And a lot of that was the threat of the three-pointer, which opened up the lane for him to get to the basket in that way. I think a guy like Anthony Edwards, who's so physically imposing, I feel like that needs to be the thing that leads the way. And then you play in the mid-range. And then you play everywhere else. Because here's the thing. And I saw this last year with Kyrie Irving. I saw it last year with Luka Doncic. And I saw it last year with Anthony Edwards. Those legs got tired as the playoffs go on. And the longer the shots you take, the harder it is you got to push to get there. So you got to be able to rely on something. Even though you might say, man, the physicality of driving to the basket ain't easy either. You're absolutely right. But free throws are easy. Getting to the basket ain't easy, but free throws, when you can slow the game down in that way, when you can make reads that get guys other shots or other guys' shots that aren't so inclined to create them, I think we're splitting hairs in a way, but I think the evolution of Anthony Edwards' game takes him to that space. The last one for me, Ice, and I'm curious what you think of him because his game is so sophisticated right now. A front runner for MVP last year, he was in his top three. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in Oklahoma City. That game is polished now. That game is game tight right now. Whether you see his game maybe growing or evolving, or is it just sort of smoothing out the few things that he has to worry about?
Yeah. I mean, I think he looks so polished because it's like back-to-back seasons of averaging 30 and doing it in an efficient way, which your team was good, right? You're not averaging 30 and you played for the Pistons. Like, your team was good. So I think where he'll have to grow because of his game and because it's so sophisticated and because he's going to see more coverage and more numbers thrown at him this season is I think his distribution. I think his assist numbers and the way in which he sets up other teammates is going to have to grow because he's just going to face more coverage and tougher coverage. I think my research showed that, you know, he's never averaged more than 6.2 assists per game, which obviously isn't terrible. But does that get over 7 this season? And I think it could be the season in which it does because of where the league is, how the league is going to guard him. But also in the early games we've seen, he's been dishing it out very well.
I think it's one of those things with a guy like Shea. We think of getting off the ball as making like the assist pass. Mm. I think going back to the Anthony Edwards discussion, just the gravity. Sometimes it's the pass that leads to the pass. Sometimes it's the mere threat of where you are on the floor that enables your teammates to get off, because I can take my chances with Chet Holmgren one-on-one. I may be able to take my chances with J-Dub one-on-one. I have zero chance if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is on the weak side of the floor. He's already a pretty good defender. He led the league in steals. He's really handsy. He's long. He's kind of got like a throwback alert. Kind of got a little bit of Penny Hardaway to his game. Penny was more athletic as a young player. Shai is a little more moves like water. He's not necessarily going to be the guy to dunk on you, but he has such an efficient game. He doesn't waste movement. You talked about it with Anthony right. Edwards. His footwork is exquisite. So I'm with you on Shai. I think, honestly, it's just a matter of accomplishment. Like, his offensive game is rounded out. He doesn't turn it over much. He's not a guy that, because there's not a lot of athletic variance to his game, you're not going to speed him up. You're not going to force him into a sloppy basketball game. And even if, when his team did not get out of the second round, it wasn't like it was his fault. So I just think his game is more or less about now. Hey, we just need to win more games, or win more games in May. And if we get to June. That's it for the Western Conference. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about players in the Eastern Conference, including the player who sparked this conversation, Mr. Paulo Banchero. Back here on The Good Word with Ice. We're going to the Eastern Conference now. Shockingly, Jason Tatum is no longer 19. We've been saying that for about, 7-8 years. He's only 19. That man got kids. He's part of that starting five. Like, he is a full-grown adult. Remember, his hair wasn't growing. He had that. He didn't have the curls back there. He barely had facial hair. He's a full-grown man, and now he's an NBA champion. He is under 28 now, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know exactly if we put him in. We didn't draw a conclusion in the West, and I'll ask you about that before we finish the segment, about which one is the best player under 28. So for purposes of this discussion, we'll circle back. But Ice, how much more room does Jason Tatum have left to grow when you look at his game, not just this season, because this season he's off to a great start. The Celtics are shooting the blood out of the ball because they're taking 53s a night. Tatum is already one of the most decorated two-way players in the game. He takes on matchups on both ends of the floor. Is it shot selection that you think is the final frontier for him? Because it's not that he can get more athletic, not that he's necessarily like lacking, but he's not a super athlete. So is that just the final thing for Jason Tatum, is just the shot selection and maybe the distribution, if you want to say the distribution isn't consistent enough for you?
I think that depends sometimes on how the Celtics play, and if he's on a roll, he doesn't have to distribute, right? And so it's more so within their scheme. But yeah, I agree with you. I think he's at a place now where the mature IQ is what you need to get to, that you are always reading the game the right way, making the correct decisions. Yes, of course, maybe you make one or two, three mistakes a game, but they have to be minimal. So I think of it almost like you need to be playing, perfect games, like perfect mature games in that way. I also think for where the Celtics are as a franchise and where they're trying to get to, that this is going to be critical for him. Obviously, people are going to get better. They're going to challenge them a little bit better. And so I think him growing at his maturity level and his IQ on the floor only helps them play a better brand of basketball, which is already the best one out there right now. But I think that's where he can grow. I think all the accolades and things are going to come. He's got a ton. I just say it's maturity and thinking the game.
I'm not a devotee of the advanced stats. Like, I'm not. I use some of them that I understand. Like, one thing I don't want to do, I don't want to turn basketball, which is a game of visual grace and fun, into a game played by numbers. But there are some numbers that I use because consistently is held true throughout 75 to, I guess this is year 78 for the NBA. Win shares per 48. That's a great indicator of MVP. I have no idea what it actually is. I just know that when you see the number and it's really high, that means something. Jason Tatum's win shares per 48 this season is around nearly a 32. That's like MVP territory. That's Nikola Jokic territory. That's Michael Jordan territory. Now, granted, it's a 4-game sample size. A lot of that is skewed towards players who are good rebounders and great shooters. Tatum shooting 41% from three and 51% from the field. And he, like I said before, he's always been a great, he's always evolved, or he's has evolved, excuse me, into being a great defender. But when you look at his basketball reference page, man, it has him showing up like a bunch of second bananas next to him as saying the similar players to him. James Worthy, LaMarcus Aldridge, Terry Cummings, Larry Johnson, who's really good, actually, Larry Johnson, who I'm going to bring up later during the fight segment. But for some reason, the numbers are not as kind to him as they are to other players, and I cannot figure out why. I think it's probably because he's not as efficient as a scorer, and he doesn't get to the line a lot because, you know what I mean? Like, once again, the physicality of the game and not being a super athlete, so he's not blown by people. But there's something missing there. I won't say something missing. There's a step that he hasn't quite yet evolved into, which brings me ice to the 50-point man, Paolo Banchero, who I feel like is a bigger Carmelo Anthony, right? Carmelo's a big boy. And I think that's the thing that people missed out on with Melo was that he was punishing you. He was built like a running back, except he was 6'8", 6'9". And that enabled him to get to the line and enabled him to sort of wear you down throughout the course of the game. Banchero, I think, has the same skill set of being a 6'9", 6'10 guy with a handle who can score from all different levels, or that he can score at all three levels. Wouldn't call him a super athlete, but I feel like he's evolved ice into a much better basketball player sooner than I would have expected him to do, and for a team that has realistic expectations on crashing the party in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, definitely been thoroughly impressed with him. And I mean, obviously, anytime somebody scores 50, 37 in the first half, it's going to be impressive. There's not a lot of players. Maybe I'll think about it after this. But what I thought about in watching his game is that he could either choose skill or power any possession and have a chance of dominating in that. Like, when we talk about why he's being impressive right now, it's because of the skill that he's added to his game, right? The shooting ability, the mid-range. God, I love his mid-range game.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Effortless, like, blows into it. It is almost like he's running on air as he's pulling up and then just drops it down. But I think that's what's making him take his game to another level this year. But it's a combination of skill and power at any time. And he seems like he has a very good idea of how to manage it within his game, which is why we're seeing maybe some of these numbers now. Like, that balance just seems very mature.
He's a matchup nightmare. Like, you put a quicker defender on him, then he's going to take him to the block. You bring him out to the outside, he's going to outquick them. He's going to outskill them. There isn't an ideal. It's almost like LeBron in a way, where you were talking about, where you were saying the skill versus the power, except LeBron was just so much more athletically, you know, jumping over you, running past you, that sort of thing. But the matchup problem he poses is all the same. One thing I said about Anthony Edwards that I guess I didn't say it, but I think Paolo Banchero would be wise to do it. I feel like he's done it a little bit more. That baseline jumper from about 16 to 17 feet, that prevents teams from coming to double you. If you're turning towards the baseline, they can't see you. Or you can't see them, by and large. Like, the only thing you have to worry about is making sure you're not behind the backboard. Like, when the games get tight, it's going to be the margins that help you go from good shots to great shots. And from a team knowing that we can go down, we can throw the ball on the block, on the box to you, or we can set you up on the wing and you're going to go down, you're going to dribble to get the shot that you want. I feel like Paolo Banchero, at whatever his best is going to be, mind you, he's only 22 years old, so he's on the younger end of this discussion.
Yeah.
But for purposes of this, as his game grows and matures, and we assume the Orlando Magic are going to be here because they've made a lot of smart personnel moves. They added KCP. They still got a young core, not quite Oklahoma City young core, but they probably have the best young core in the Eastern Conference that has a chance of doing some decent enough winning in the meantime while the old teams are still old. So when Paolo reaches full bloom, if he's the guy that you're going to throw the ball down to and there's no answer for him other than hope he misses, that's the next step for him. And I think I'm really fascinated by all of that. Now, Ice, you were a point guard. So I feel like I have to bring the next two point guards to the table for you, right?
Okay.
We got two Tyreses. You can pick whichever one you want. We got Tyrese Halliburton, the big guard, with a funky shot that has not had a great start to the season, but had an all-NBA, you know, Steve Nash sort of effect on his team last year in the Pacers and driving them to the Eastern Conference Finals. And Tyrese Maxey, small guard, playing really, really fast for the 76ers, where his role is going to change exponentially night to night because of what happens with Joel Embiid, Paul George, and of course, that's in your backyard in Philadelphia. So go ahead and pick which one you want to jump into.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in and talk about Hallie. I'm going to talk about Halliburton. Okay, I'll let you talk about Tyrese, maybe.
Okay.
But what I love about Hallie is obviously, like, led the league in assists last season, but the way in which he did it, you know, he creates so many different ways, options, opportunities, and technically speaking, his passing is elite. I think I mentioned this on the pod before, but I know him from doing like point guard college basketball camps and stuff. And so we did like a session together for a few days, and he's one of the best in the ever, but like in currently in the game at jumping to pass. Most people would say that's turnover, terrible.
You don't teach that.
Growing up. Yeah, coaches going up are like, jump stop, right? That's the first thing they say, jump stop, be on 2 feet, be under control, and then deliver a pass. But we literally watch clips of him jumping to pass, but he jumps with purpose, right? And not crazy athletic, but he jumps with purpose. Mm-hmm. But I really like how he's grown his game. You mentioned the funky shot. There are tons of players who have been good shooters who have had hybrids of a shot, right? Their own kind of thing.
Yep.
I think for him, it's just if that is going to be your shot, then you've got to make sure it's consistent. If it's at a point where you still feel like you're working on it, and there was a point last season where he was very consistent with his three and he found a rhythm. And so I think I have an issue with funky shots because I'm a shooter. I'm just like, I think you can get it fixed. Like I always think. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I've had this with like other shooting coaches. Because I grew up going to a shooting coach and like I train athletes, but I think you can get it fixed. I think there is a version of how all of us just shoot. That's a certain version. And yes, I think based on your dimensions, hands, whatever, it can be slightly different and be a hybrid.
Yeah.
But I think it can get fixed. I don't think anybody should have a hitch. I don't understand the need for hitches. Like I do. As a shooter, I do. I think there is a certain way in which we all
can. So what do you think of Mikal Bridges and the hitch in the new hitch in his shot? Would you have messed with it? Would you, because you're saying every shot could be fixed. Would you have messed with it?
Okay, I don't like the hitch. I don't agree with it. And I don't see how it's manageable. You also talk about, too, like mechanics, body getting tired. I also think the hitch takes away from energy, which you need. You know, you need a constant flow in your shot. You need a constant good swing. And so the hitch takes away kinetic energy. And then you got to hitch back and come on. So anyway, yes, I would have changed.
No. My counter, and I sure a shooting coach, so I'm not even going to go against your expertise.
Shooter.
You're a shooter. You are a shooter, first and foremost, so you are an expert in the craft. Larry Bird pulled that thing behind his head. I know Larry Bird retired before you were even conceived. We have talked about such a thing. Larry Bird retired in 1992, so you've probably seen none of the Birdman. But for those who see me on YouTube, he pulled that thing behind his head like a shot put. Scariest shot I've ever seen in my life. Okay? Boston fans, I just gave y'all one. I fear Larry Bird like I fear no other athlete ever. You couldn't inbound a pass around him. Thanks, Zeke. You couldn't inbound a pass around him. Like, scariest dude ever. Reggie Miller had this kind of weird shot where his hands would cross ice. He would shoot and his hands would kind of, you know what I mean? They would cross as opposed to a clean shot.
Yeah.
Steph Curry, believe it or not. I think Steph, he doesn't shoot from his hip the way he used to, but I feel like he pulls it from, not necessarily from his base, like Clay's shot almost legit just comes from like almost like the center of his chest.
Center of gravity. Yeah.
Yes. You teach Klay Thompson's jump shot. You teach Ray Allen's jump shot. You teach Allen Houston's jump shot. You don't teach Steph Curry's jump shot. And that's the best shooter we've ever seen. So sometimes I feel like the perfectly looking jump shot, or my thing, Ice, is if you got to the league shooting well with this, by year too. 5 or 6, I feel like that's a tough time to hit the reset button. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So we get off track, but Ice is a shooter, so we had to go down the shooting range. Now, Tyrese Maxey is my guy. And I think he is a fascinating player because of the team that he plays on. I voted for him for most improved player of the year before he won it because I felt like he made the leap in 22-23 when he was just sort of really coming into his own. He was able to harness the speed. He was able to read the game a little bit better. He hadn't really figured out the distribution part, but they weren't asking him to do that yet. Now they're asking him to toggle between being the third option when everybody's there, maybe the second option when Paul George is there, and the first option when neither one of those guys, Paul George or Joel Embiid, is there. I don't know if that makes for consistency. I think that is kind of confusing even for a guy who is an all-star, who is an all-NBA type of player, who has done a really good job of maxing out his career to this point. Like, you can see now that the weight of having to carry that 76er offense is weighing on him because, once again, when the defenses don't have anybody else to account for, they're going to focus on you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in a positive way, it'll challenge him to grow in every area, right? He'll be forced to because you're going to be put in multiple situations, game in, game out. I think the frustration for me would be how consciously aware are you that your game has to change, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then depending on, and then we say that, right? But then depending on the day, well, Paul George could have an off day. Well, Joel Embiid could have an off day. So this could have been the game plan and mindset that I'm going into. And then people start not knocking down shots, flipping the ball left and right. Okay, now I've got to be me again. I think the mindset is just don't turn it off, right? It's to understand that more is needed of you or different, not even necessarily more, different is needed of you in different situations. But he can still be spectacular. You know, he had career jumps in every area last year. And so proven that he's grown literally in every area. And so I think now we're going to see this word I've been saying, this all. And I think this is what we're talking about when we reach that players that are 28 years old, maturity, right? The maturity now is situationally speaking, how can you maintain being you, but still do exactly what the team needs, despite maybe what everyone else is putting in that day?
Yeah,
that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And I think at 6'2", there's a level of special that you have to be like. We had this conversation about Jalen Brunson last year, and everybody got all up in arms about feeling like Jalen Brunson was disrespected because he's 6'2". Tyrese Maxey's a different type of 6'2". He's a quick zip 6'2". Right. Jalen Brunson is a Chevy Yukon.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's a Corvette, you know, darting through traffic. Like, it's different levels to it, right? Like, there's names I didn't bring up that I want to bring up, like Evan Mobley, who I've called Slim Duncan, you know, because I think I am a member of Evan Mobley Hive. I think that man is going to, once he figuring out his base and his body, I think that's going to be something. I think he's a generational defensive player. LaMelo Ball, so far this year, y'all, 31-7-7. Like, he is he's playing efficient basketball. It's just that he plays for the Charlotte Hornets, and we don't know that the Charlotte Hornets actually exist. Now, before we take our last break, Ice, we didn't come to a conclusion on the best players under 20. We just threw out names. So I'm just going to say mine are Luka Doncic and Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Mm-hmm. Mine are... I'm sticking with the guards. So mine, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I agree with you, Jason Tatum.
It's funny, we put a limit on Jason Tatum's like career and growth, but we both just gave him a great compliment. So take that, Boston.
I hate giving Celtics fans compliments.
Back here on The Good Word, it is time for the last word, and this is maybe something we should have led the podcast off with. Because Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla, who I am actually increasingly becoming a fan of, I think he's a little on the weird side. I think he's a lot on the weird side. But you always know what he thinks, because when you ask him a question, he's going to answer. And he wasn't even asked a question about this, Ice. He wants to bring back fighting. He was on 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. He was asked about ideas for rule changes. He says, start quote, "The biggest thing we rob people of from an entertainment standpoint is you can't fight anymore. I wish you could bring back fighting. How come in baseball they're allowed to clear benches?" Baseball players ain't black. That's the simple answer to this question, Ice. Baseball players ain't black. Now, Ice, since you were conceived in 1995, 96, you didn't actually see a lot of the major brawls that happened actually in front of the commissioner. I think that was JoJo English and Pete Myers in 1994 in the Bulls Knicks semifinals. In front of David Stern and his wife, them dudes was going to get suspended. Knicks Heat in those playoff series in 97 and 98. Remember, for those of you who are not born in 1996, Jeff Van Gundy hanging on to Alonzo Mourning's leg for dear life after Alonzo and Larry Johnson were swinging back and forth and none of those punches actually connected. And then the fight of my lifetime, Ice. You know what the fight of my lifetime is? The Malice at the Palace, right? 2004, November 19th. I'm going to tell y'all a quick story, Ice. I was in college at the time. I was coming home, like a friend's birthday thing was at a bowling alley or something. So I was driving home and I was listening to the game in my car. Like, this is how old the car was back then. I had the detachable stereo face because cars was getting their stereos jacked. So I had the detachable face. So the game was just about ending. And I was like, oh, I'll just throw this CD in to listen to it. Remember CDs? I don't know if anybody remembers CDs. But my sister calls and she says, they're fighting at the game. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's a rivalry. Of course they're fighting at the game, whatever. She was like, no, Vinny, they're fighting at the game, as in the players are fighting the fans. And I was like, wait, what? Face back on, all this stuff. And it's, you know, it's pandemonium at the Palace. And then I get to the bowling alley and I see what happens and everything else. And from that point on, that was Ron Artest and all of his Ron Artestisms. That was like a week after Ron Artest said he wanted to take a time off from the Pacers to promote a rap album. Steven Jackson, before we really knew all of Steven Jackson's movies, right? On the other side, you had Ben Wallace, who nobody wants problems with, including Ben Wallace's brother, who came really, really close to knocking somebody clean out, right? Rasheed Wallace, Derek Coleman, like that. If that happened today, Ice, Twitter would blow up. Thank goodness Twitter wasn't around. But Joe Mazzulla, that's the reason why we can't have fighting, because nobody wants to see black dudes fighting in front of white people.
I agree with you.
Now, Ice, Ice, because Ice had all the stuff to say before. Okay. While we,
I agree with you, comma. Honestly, okay, this is really my thought. There's no fighting in the NBA because they're already friends. Like, everybody is clearly friends. Everybody clearly finishes games and hangs out together. Everybody clearly is finishing the season and it's the first people that they're getting on the yacht with. Everybody's friends. It's people from other teams. It's not your teammates. Like, I cover the W a lot. And it's only 144 women who play. So it's a very small group, right? Everybody kind of got to be friends. It's fights in the W. Because, yeah, we're friends in the offseason. When we're overseas. When we're both playing for China. But in this season currently, you are not my friend. I don't think the NBA has that mentality. I don't think it's that competitive. I think some of these guys are like, I'm happy my friend played well today against me.
I think that's a bit strong. I think guys are competitive, but I do think that the money has changed things in such a way that you don't look at the guy in front of you as the guy that's preventing you from getting your money. I think when you're looking at 144 players, a smaller sample size, you know that you could be a top five pick in the W and not make the roster. So you know you are singing for your supper every night. That's not the case in the NBA. And because of the AAU culture and everything else, and the fact that these dudes really don't want to fight, I'll tell you this. Now, sometimes dudes do want to fight. Like, in a heated moment, sometimes dudes do. But then they hear that voice in their heads, hey, man, that suspension is going to cost you a game check. That game check might be $500,000. You don't want them problems. I think, however, the threat of a fight, not the actual fight, Ice, but the threat of a fight would curtail some of this behavior. Like the Dylan Brooks of the world, where he out here trying to body slam Victor Wembanyama, if he firmly believed that there was a Charles Oakley, Rick Mahorn type of dude waiting on the other side to come in there and knock him upside his head, A, that make for better basketball, because you'd have to really watch your watch over your shoulder, and B, we'd see how tough you really were. Like, there is not, it's not to me about the actual...
I think that about Draymond Green. You say Dylan Brooks, I think that about Draymond.
We've seen Draymond's movies. Draymond put a man in a $1 million dream sleeper hold, okay?
Okay. But same thing. If you thought that somebody around the league...
Are you trying to say that Draymond Green is not as tough as he purports himself to be?
I think if somebody hit back, yeah.
Woo-hoo-hoo, I like it. Now...
But you feel about this man.
I think there are tough guys in the league. I think there are fewer... tougher guys in the NBA, by and large, because that type of play has been legislated out. You can't just be out here in the NBA without a strong skill set. And your skill set is, I'm a rebounder and I'm stopping you from dunking on me. It ain't going to be a place for that in today's game. I think there should be. I think fans relate to that more. That's why you see all the nostalgia in the 30 for 30s. It's not because the basketball, the quality of the basketball was so great and so skilled and everything else. It was that you felt the heat of the competition. And now, because A, the NBA is the league where it's the most proximity from players to fans, you do not want to risk players going into stands with fans, because that's lawsuits, that's a bunch of other different things. And that's, once again, y'all, America don't want to see black players fighting. Not on TV, not in HD, not on Meta with your binoculars and your glasses, not in your suites, none of that. That's how we get the dress code, which I thought was really actually racist or had some levels of racist undertones. But I thought the dress code actually worked. And I feel like we need the dress code back, because these dudes act like they don't know how to dress when they come to work. But that's a story for a whole nother discussion. And I feel like Joe Mazzulla, if nothing else, I like the fact that Joe Mazzulla is willing to put himself out there and say things that may not go with the grain. I'm not saying hateful things, because a lot of people believe that saying hateful things is, I'm just going against the grain and speaking my mind. What he said wasn't hateful. What he said wasn't harmful. He was just speaking of, hey, maybe there can be some vigilante justice and some people won't be out here acting a plum fool. And yes, America, you can handle it. I'm saying no, America, y'all can't. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Ice Young. Thanks to Ice for riding shotgun with me on Wednesdays. Ice, why don't you tell us what you've been working on outside of podcasting with me here on Yahoo Sports?
Yes, coming up with a lot of NCAA women's basketball coverage for the college basketball season. Recording a preview actually tomorrow of top five teams you should watch and storylines. And then I have work coming up as a color commentator. So I work with CBS, NBC, ESPN, calling college basketball games. You should hear my voice a ton.
All over the place. Get them checks. Thanks, Ice. Thanks to producer John and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back on Monday with another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.